Masechet Baba Kama Daf Pe Tet. We saw a beraita that if two witnesses come and testify that a certain woman got divorced and she received the entire amount of her ketubah, let's say her ketubah was the regular 200 zuz plus another 1,000 zuz added to that 1,200 zuz, and yet she already got paid it. But it turns out that they're edim zomemin; they weren't even there at the time and day. And place, and they therefore have to pay that which they would have caused the woman to lose. Now, she would have lost the entire amount of the ketubah. So you might think, well, they claim that she got paid this 1,200 zuz, but in fact, she didn't get paid that. And so therefore, they were going to cause her to lose the 1,200 zuz, because if she was already divorced and received it, then eventually, when she actually does get divorced or the husband dies before her, then she would not be able to collect it. She would be losing out that money. But however, do not say that they pay the full amount of the 1,200 zuz, because it's not a sure thing that she would collect it. If she would die first while they're married, then she would not collect anything at all. Rather, we look at the tovatana at ketubata. We look at the financial value of the ketubah now. We can call it a futures or an option. What does that mean? We ask someone, how much would you pay right now to receive that payout of the ketubah should it happen, right? So let's say it was a fully 1,200. So a person says, well, I don't know, I think 50-50 chance that he dies first or she dies first. So he'd be willing to pay 600 zuz now for the possibility of getting 1,200 zuz later on. Or it might be more, or it might be less. Maybe he knows that they're probably going to get divorced. He sees that this marriage is kind of unstable, so he bets that they're probably going to get divorced. Maybe then he would pay a little more. Okay, so whatever it is, you say, how much is the bet? That how much would someone pay for the right to collect the ketubah in the future should the circumstances be come about that she would get paid? That is the future value of the ketubah. That's how much the Edim Zomim tried to remove from her, because she may not end up getting it at all. Instead, we account for it that way. That was the Baraita. Now that we mentioned that, we're going to learn another law about it. So here, ki amar Abaye, tovat hana'a ho'il ve'ata liyada ne'ma ba milita. Abaye says, now that we mentioned this law about the value of the ketubah in the future, so let's say another halakha related to it. Tovat hana'a la'isha havya, dihav desalka datechla ba'al havya, lemrula adim mai afsadinach. I havat mezabenat la l'tovat hana'a ba'al hava shakil minach. So he says the law should be is that the value, the future value of the ketubah, should the wife decide to sell it in the middle of the marriage, she says, I want some cash now, I want to buy something, I'm going to sell the future value of my ketubah. That money goes to the woman. She keeps that money and she can do with it whatever she wants. Because if you would think that the husband would get it, then the previous baraita that we just talked about would not make sense, because the edim could say to the woman, what did we almost cause you to lose? Even if you had sold your ketubah for the future value, you wouldn't have gotten anything. All of it would have gone to your husband. And so if you had sold it for the future value, the husband would take that money from you. Therefore, we did not cause you any loss in our false testimony, because you wouldn't have gotten the money anyway. Therefore, you know, although now we're found to be a edim zomim, we shouldn't have to pay you anything, they could tell the woman. But the Braita doesn't say so. The Braita says that they do have to pay the woman the future value of the ketubah. Therefore, we can prove that the wife, in fact, does get the ketubah. However, Amar Rav Shalman, Mishum Diika Revach Betar. Rav Shalman says, even if the husband gets the money of the future value of the ketubah, still the Edim Zoamin would have to pay her that value. Why? Because she is happy that there should be gain in the household. Let's say that the future value of the ketubah is 600 zuz. And let's say it goes to the husband, in fact. Still, the husband, what is he going to do with it? He's going to buy nicer furniture. He might take the family on a trip. He's going to put that gain into the family. And she will gain thereby also. She lives in the house, so whatever he spends it on, she will benefit as well. And therefore, the Edim, now that they turn out to be liars, it makes sense that they should, in fact, have to pay her that amount. And therefore, Rav Shalman thinks that there is no proof from here that the money, that if she sells the value of her ketubah, that it goes to her. Could be that it goes to her husband. Amar Rav Hilchata Tovat Hanah Le'Isha V'en HaBaal Ochel Perot Ma'itama Perat Takinu LeRabanan Perat DePera Lo Takinu LeRabanan. And Rav says the final law is that the value, a future value of the ketubah, if the woman decides to sell it, she keeps it. And furthermore, the husband cannot even get a benefit of the produce, the investment value of that money. Why? Because they only gave to the husband pera, fruits, but not fruit of fruits. In other words, if the wife brings in land into the marriage, so while they are married, the husband can enjoy the fruits while the wife retains ownership of the land. So that's true for land. That would be produce. But if she decides that she's going to sell something that belongs to her, like the ketubah or some land that she has, we're going to come back to selling land, and she gets money for it. So the money itself is a product of something that she owned, and so she keeps that. And since that itself is a product, the husband cannot get the product of a product. In other words, the investment value of if they buy something else with it that produces income, the husband does not have a right to that. So if she sells the ketubah, she gets the full amount of the money. And anything that she invests with it, she keeps, because the husband does not get an investment of an investment. Ki ata rav papa v'rabuna bered rav Yoshua mibe'er rav amre tanena letakanat usha. Okay, when rav papa rav Huna, the son of Yoshua, came from the study hall, they said, we can derive from our Mishnah the fact that in Usha, they did in fact make a takana, where we talked about this on the previous stuff. What is a takana of Usha? It's that if a wife decides, has nichse melog, that's land that she brings into the marriage, that she keeps ownership of, at the end of the marriage, if the husband dies, or they get divorced, she gets the land as is, whether it went up in value or down in value, it's totally hers. So she gets the land back. That's nichse melog. If she decides during the marriage, and during the marriage he enjoys the produce. If during the marriage she decides to sell the land to someone else, if eventually she dies first, the husband can inherit her, and he can go after the buyer and say, sorry, I had a right to this land first because I'm the husband and I have a right to inherit her, and then he takes it away from her. That was the takana of Usha, to give that to husbands, to benefit the husband, even though before the takana, the letter of the law would be that she would in fact be allowed to sell it. Okay, so now we're not sure about this takana of Usha. Was it ever really made? Did it stick? So here we're going to bring a proof from our Mishnah that in fact there was such a takana, because the Mishnah taught, Ha'ibid v'aisha pigiatan ra'a ha'chovel behen chaya v'hem shechavul be'acharim peturin v'isakada tachleta takanat Usha tezaben nichse melog v'titen le. Mishnah said that it's always bad to have an encounter of injury, injurious encounter with a married woman, or with a slave or a married woman. Why? Because if someone causes injury to them, then that perpetrator has to pay for injury. However, if they cause injury to someone else, they do not have to pay because they don't have their own money. Eved, anything he gets goes to the master. He's like the master's hand. And so to a wife, anything that any money that she makes goes to her husband. She doesn't have her own access to money to pay, and therefore she does not have to pay. The injured party loses out. Now, if you think that there is no such thing as Takanat Usha, and she can sell Nechseh Melog, we're assuming right now that she has such property that she brought in, so let her sell the property, which is a perfectly good sale, and she gets the money from that sale and pay the damage that she caused. So why would you say that it's bad to be injured by a married woman if she can sell it and pay? Therefore, it must be that there is a takana of usha, and that's why, you know, she can try to sell it, but the sale will not be final because the husband will be able to go after it and take it. So there's no point in her selling it in the first place. Okay, ula ta'amich, nihi namedi tele takanat usha, v'la ma'aseh mizabene legamre, tezben nechseh melog b'tvatana avdi ten le. Okay, but now we answer say, in fact, there's no proof from our Mishnah that there is a takanav usha, because even if we assume that there is a takanav usha, and so therefore she cannot fully sell the land, because then you can always get it back from the buyer. Nevertheless, why can't she sell the future rights to the Nechseh Melog, right? According to the value of that it is now, that someone would pay, how much would you pay, betting on the fact that he will die or divorce her, and she will get the full amount of the land, that she will get the whole land back. So that is something that she could sell right now get money from it. So even if there is Takanat Usha, and you say, okay, she can't actually sell the land, but she can sell the future right to the land, which is worth less than the land, but still is worth enough money to pay for the injury. Rather, the only way we can answer this second question is to assume that she doesn't have any land. She didn't bring any into it, and once you're assuming that, then that will answer then if we apply that to the proof to begin with, that she doesn't have any land, then there is no proof. So therefore, we reject Rav Papa's proof that there is any source from this Mishnah that there was Takanat Usha. This Mishnah that says it's bad to be injured by a married woman because she won't pay is simply assuming that she doesn't have any land that she brought in, so there's nothing to sell. If she did have land, yeah, then you're right. Maybe she could either sell the land or sell the future value of the land. Okay, so now let's say since she has no land, why can't she sell the future value of the ketubah itself, the baseline ketubah, the 200 plus whatever is added, maybe another 1,000, she can sell the futures of her ketubah and use that to pay the injured party. So why doesn't the Mishnah say that she should do that? Because our Mishnah is following opinion of Rabbi Meir that a person is not allowed to live with his wife, not even for a short time, without a ketubah. And if she sells the financial advantage of her marriage contract, then basically she has no ketubah. So that's why we are not going to require her, we're not going to even allow her to sell off her rights to the ketubah. But then we reject that, because what is Rabbi Meir's reasoning? Rabbi Meir's whole reason why he says you're not allowed, a married couple cannot live without a ketubah, is so that it will not be easy for the husband to divorce his wife. If he gets angry at her and says, okay, that's it, I'm divorcing you, then she'll remind him, oh, you know, you have a ketubah that says 1,200 zuz. He says, 1,200 zuz I have to come up with now? You know what? Okay, I forgive you. I apologize. And they'll make up. So it should be difficult for the husband to divorce his wife. So this is protection for the wife. Now, in this case, should he decide to divorce her, he's still going to have to pay that buyer, right? So here he's not going to quickly divorce her, because if he does, then those who bought the right to the ketubah, they have the right to collect it. So as soon as they hear that there was a divorce, they're going to come to the husband and says, we have the ketubah rights. Now you have to pay us that full amount of 1,200. So that still will be a deterrent to him. So there's actually no reason why she couldn't sell the future value of the ketubah now and pay for the damage. So how come the Mishnah, again, doesn't say that she pays for the injury? Must be because the future value of a ketubah is mere words. I'm just promising in the future, then you'll collect this. And so words cannot be mortgaged for the payment of a debt or payment to the injured party. This is only a promise in the future that should they get divorced, the husband will have to pay them. And we reject that. Although these are just words, these are words that are sold for real money, right? A person, that buyer who buys the future value of the ketubah, let's say he's paying half 50 cents on the dollar, so he's really paying that 600 for if the ketubah is worth 1200. That's real money that they give to the woman, and she can take that and pay the injured party. Why not? Rather, it must be that a married woman, again, we're talking about someone who didn't bring in land into the marriage. She just has her ketubah, which we're assuming, let's say, 200 plus another 1,000, 1,200. And the reason why the Beit Din is not going to require her to sell the rights of her ketubah in order to pay an injured party, the Mishnah says, right, it's bad to be injured by a married woman because he's not going to get paid, is because we're assuming the position of Shmuel. Shmuel says that, let's say, A has an IOU that he owes B money. And so this IOU is worth money. If he owes money, so he gives A gives an IOU to B, and Mr. B, right, has this IOU that he can collect $1,000 from A. Now that IOU is worth value, and if Mr. B decides, you know what, I want some cash now, and I don't want to wait till I can use IOU, and who knows if he'll pay it. I want to sell this IOU right now, and maybe he'll get 80 cents on the dollar. So he sells it to C. Okay, so B sells to C this IOU for 80 cents on the dollar. Shmuel says that B at any time can decide to forgive that loan. And he just sold the IOU to someone else, and now he forgives the loan such that when C goes to A and say, hey, I want to collect that loan that you gave to B because I bought the rights to it, then A will say, oh, B already forgave the loan. Now, this is not a very nice thing to do, to sell an IOU and then to forgive the very debt that was was there to pay that IOU. But Shmuel says it's valid. Okay, and so it is valid. And even if B sold this IOU to C and B dies, the inheritors of B, let's say his sons, can say, listen, our father, you owed money to our father. That's okay. We forgive it, right? They can forgive it. And then C is up the creek without a paddle, cannot collect that IOU. Okay, so that's Shmuel's law. And assuming that's so, if we apply the same thing to the woman, then a woman, a ketubah, is kind of a debt that the husband owes to the woman. He doesn't owe it right now, but he's going to owe it at the end of marriage. So here's the problem. The woman, if she sells the amount of the ketubah to a buyer for 600 zoos, she can at any point say to the husband, you know what, I forgive any payment of the ketubah. It's okay, you don't have to pay it. Now, she won't be out because she's not going to be the one to get paid anyway, but rather the buyer is the one that will be out. And so therefore, we're not going to make the ketubah. We're not even going to allow the woman, the wife, to sell the future rights of the ketubah to a third party in order to pay for damages as she did, because then it's going to cause a future mishap the ketubah to her husband, and then that third party won't be able to collect it. Amre zabune zabed v'titen le v'machala le legabe ma'al timhala. So now we say, well, why not? Even with Shmuel, let her sell the future value of the ketubah now, get the $600, pay the injured party, And if afterwards she forgives the husband the ketubah payment, so then the husband will not, in fact, let's say they get divorced later, will not have to pay the buyer. So what? I mean, if that's the law of the land, then the buyers of futures know that there's always a risk. If you buy an IOU, there's always a risk that the person that borrowed them, that lent out the money, will forgive the loan, and then you won't be able to collect. But they take that into account in as part of the price. So let her do that anyway. And if the husband forgives, then okay, the buyer will lose out. But at least the injured party got paid. So this law is different from a regular IOU, where it's not, we assume it's not likely that the lender is going to forgive the loan. He's going to say, listen, instead of paying me, pay him. He bought the IOU from me. Most of the time, they're going to keep the loan. But when it comes to husband and wife, they're still married. So we assume that they actually like each other. And so therefore, we say that for sure, when it's regarding a wife to a husband, she is definitely going to forgive the value of the ketubah. Right? He's going to say, hey, you know, who? Even if I pay, who am I going to pay that third party? Hey, why don't you forgive it? She'll say, okay, that's fine. And therefore, that will cause the buyer of the ketubah to lose out. And we're doing it, the Bet Din is basically doing it actively, because it's for sure going to happen, and we're overseeing this. So the Bet Din is not going to say to the married woman, oh, you caused an injury, you better sell your ketubah, the future rights of your ketubah, to pay for it. And then the buyer is going to buy that, and then she's going to forgive, and the buyer is going to be out money, and the Bet Din is going to, the buyer is going to look to the Bet Din, what'd you do? What'd you put me into this bad situation? So that's why the Bet Din is not going to make that happen. So now we have a good solution. Instead of the woman, look, this woman, she caused injury to someone. Now, instead of selling her ketubah to a third party and then taking the money given to the injured party, because that didn't work, then that buyer will lose out. Why don't she just take her ketubah, give it to the injured party, and say, listen, injured party, I'm transferring to you the right to collect the ketubah. That is worth money, right? You can go calculate how much that it would be on the futures ketubah market. And so I'm giving it to you directly, because even if afterwards she decides that she is going to forgive her husband any payment of the ketubah, so the injured party didn't lose anything. He didn't gain anything. It's true, he didn't get payment for a ketubah, but he didn't shell out money to buy it. So he didn't lose anything, because as of now, she's not paying anything at all. So it's better than nothing, right? Wouldn't you rather a possible payout in the future? It's true, it might turn into nothing, but the alternative is getting nothing at all. Remember, the Mishnah says, don't get injured by a married woman, because then she's not going to pay you anything at all. Why say nothing? Why not make her at least give the future value of her ketubah? And if she forgives it, okay, he didn't lose out. And the answer is no. Sof sof kol legabe baal vaday mahla vatruche bedina bichdi la matrichina. No, in the end, we know for sure that a wife is always going to be on the side of her husband rather than some other person who's going to get such a payout. And therefore, she's going to forgive the ketubah. And we don't want to waste the time of the Bet Din to oversee this whole deal when it's going to come to nothing. There's no point in wasting anybody's time and making her give over the future value of the ketubah to the victim. And that's why the Mishnah concluded that don't get injured by a married woman, because you won't get paid. Ela hadetanya vechen hi shechavla beba'ala lo hifsida ketubata amai tezabenina nihala leketubata leba'ala betubata na'a behad chabala di machla legabe ba'al leka peseda. How can you explain find this baraita that if a woman causes injury to her own husband, she does not lose out on her ketubah. Why not? Why shouldn't she lose out on her ketubah and have to use the ketubah in order to pay the husband for that injury? Let her sell to her husband the ketubah, the future value of the ketubah for this injury. And what were we worried about before, that the fact that we couldn't do it? Oh, because she would forgive the husband, and then the buyer would lose out, or the injured party would lose out, and we didn't want to be involved in that. But that wouldn't apply if the husband himself, because if she decides to forgive her husband the payment of the ketubah, there's no loss, because it just means that the husband won't have to pay himself. There's no loss to him, since he is both the injured party and the one who would pay out. So either he's paying himself for the injury, or she forgives the payment of the ketubah altogether. But either way, he has no loss. So why does the baraita say that she does not lose out her ketubah? Why not? Why shouldn't she pay for injuring her husband from the future value of the ketubah? And the answer is havadai b'meyid hi damar asur l'adam sheyashet ishto afilu shachat belo ketubah. So it must be that this baraita, even though the b'meyid is this didn't work beforehand when we tried to ascribe it to the b'meyid, but this one must be that this is the b'meyid's opinion, that one is not allowed to be married to his wife and live together without a ketubah. And if she would say, here, I'm giving you the value of my ketubah because of the injury, then there would be no more obligation to pay the ketubah after, so that they cannot remain married. That's why the baraita said that we do not use the value of the ketubah in order for her to pay the injury to her husband. The Gemara further explains this answer. What is the reason of the B'meir that they have to have a ketubah? So that it won't be easy for him, for the husband, to divorce her. And so here, if she would be able to pay her husband with the future value of the ketubah, then he would be able to easily divorce his wife. And then when it comes time to pay the ketubah, he'll just pay himself, because he already bought the future value of the ketubah for his injury. And so it must be that that's why the baraita says that even a wife does not lose out on her ketubah in order to pay a husband if she injured the husband. But then we reject this reading of the baraita, because we say, says even without her paying anything, right? Remember, we saw before that a woman is fundamentally obligated. She is an adult, a competent adult, and she is responsible for injury that she causes. The problem is just she doesn't have any access to money right now. But later on, if she gets divorced or widowed, and then she does get her money back, then she does have to pay at some point, whenever she does get access. Let's say she gets her land back, or she makes money later when she's single, then she does have to pay for the injury. So here also, he can even without her giving to him the future value of the ketubah. Let's say a wife injures a husband. It's okay, I'll pay you nothing. And now the husband can simply divorce his wife. And when it comes to time to pay the ketubah, then the husband will say, okay, well, so here's your ketubah. Oh, but you owe me for the injury. And so he will be easily divorce her and then collect the ketubah back because of the injury. And so once again, there'll be no impediment to divorcing her. And therefore, even without her paying the future value of the ketubah, still there will be no impediment for the husband to divorce his wife. So that cannot be the explanation of that baraita. Rather, the baraita that says that she does not have to pay injury to her own husband from her ketubah is talking about the following case: kigon de nafish ketubata demishum hahu purta la mafsid tuba. We're talking about a case where the ketubah is a large payment. Let's say the ketubah payment was, as we said before, 1,200 zuz, and the injury is only 50 zuz. So for that, for a small amount, he's not going to lose a large amount, right? Wouldn't make sense for the husband to divorce his wife. It's true, he could get 50 for his injury, but he would have to pay out 1200. So this would still be a big impediment for the husband and not to divorce his wife. So this is the type of case that the Baraita is talking about, where the Baraita teaches that she does not have to sell the future value of her ketubah to the husband to pay for the injury right now, because if she sells the entire value of the ketubah to her husband, then that's it. The husband doesn't have to pay out the ketubah in the future. Then he will simply divorce her. Rather, she doesn't pay anything, and he's not going to easily divorce her because the amount of the injury is much less than the payout. So he still will have an impediment to divorce. So now we understand that's what the Baraita is talking about. Now we ask, V'ide nefisha ketubata mi ketubah deoraita, nokma ketubah deoraita, v'idach tezabena nihale behable. Well, but if it is talking about a case where the amount of the injury is much less than the full amount of the ketubah, and in the ketubah there's a big amount. There's an extra amount of the ketubah beyond that of deoraita. Mid deoraita, ketubah only has to be 200 zuz for a bitula. And he goes and he added, as we said before, for example, 1,000 zuz. So, and now she owes him 50 for this injury. Listen, this is what we can make her pay now. All we have to do is re-establish the ketubah according to the deoraita base level of 200. That's sufficient on the deoraita level, as long as there's some impediment for the husband to divorce his wife easily. That's sufficient according to be made for there to be a deterrence, and so we can just redo the ketubah at the 200 level, and for the rest of it, the 1,000, let her pay. Let her sell the right to collect that 1,000 to the husband, and that could be, you know, for $500 or whatever whatever it's estimated to be worth. And she will hand over, right, the 50 or whatever she owes him for the injury. So why not make her sell the added part of the ketubah in order to pay for the injury that she caused her husband? And the answer is, we're talking about a case where, in fact, the amount of the ketubah is not more than the deoraita. That's it. All he gave her in the first place is the base sum of 200. And we're talking about a case where the injury that she caused him is only 4 zuz out of the, let's say, 100 zuz. Let's say she was an almana. In order to receive 4 zuz, he's not going to want to pay 25 dinar. 25 dinar is 100 zuz, which would be the deoraita payment for an almana. So that's the case it's talking about. According to this, this is a huge okimta, because it actually does mean that if the ketubah amount that he promised her is more than the lowest deoraita amount of 100 or 200 for an almana or for a betula, then in fact she would have to sell the future value of that added payment in order to get sell it to her own husband, get money to pay him for the injury that she caused him. So that would be, you know, in most cases nowadays, and in olden days also, most likely people did add more than the base amount. So in fact, she would have to pay in those cases. But I mentioned she doesn't lose out on the base value. Ela ha detanya kishem shalotim kol vehi tachtav, kach lo tafsid vehi tachtav, hold on, we have yet another baraita that says, just like we do not force a woman to sell her ketubah while she is married in order to pay for an injury, so too she does not lose out on her ketubah while she is married to him to pay for an injury. So that means she doesn't lose the value at all. But according to this answer that we just said, there are many cases where she would in fact lose out because if she, and the Ketubah says the 200 plus another 1,000, she would have to sell off that extra 1,000, and she would lose. She wouldn't, she doesn't, we don't force her to sell the entire amount of the Ketubah, but does she does lose the Tosefet Ketubah. So, right, when would she lose? Anytime her ketubah payment is more than the basic deoraita amount, she would lose out on the tosefet ketubah. So how would we explain this baraita and reconcile it with the answer we just gave? No, when it says that she will not lose out on the amount of her ketubah, we're not talking about tosefet ketubah, but rather the other clause that's in the standard ketubah, called benin dichrin, male sons. This stipulation says that if the wife should predecease her husband, then eventually when the husband dies, the estate has to pay out to her sons the payment of the ketubah. The idea of benin dichrin is that, let's say when they first get married, her family, her father, right, we want to encourage him to give a lot of a big dowry and put it give it to the marriage. Now that father, her father may not want to, because he may say, well, what if my daughter dies first, and then the son-in-law has other sons. Let's say he has other sons from other marriages, from other wives. Then that'll be split equally among all those sons. I don't want my special gift here that I'm giving to my daughter to be inherited by people who are not my flesh and blood, not even my grandchildren. So in order to encourage fathers to give more to their daughters, so then we put in the ketubah, listen, even if she dies first, all that property that you bring in will go to her own sons. So that gets paid out first, and then whatever is left gets divided evenly between all of his sons when he dies. So the Sefa is talking about Benin Dichrin and teaches that even if she sells her ketubah amount, she does not give up, she does not sell the benin dichrin. V'hachi ketani, k'shem sham mocheret ketubah da'alachet v'dovsi da'ketubat benin dichrin, ma'i tamazu zehu da'anasuha, kach mocheret ketubata le'ba'ala lo'evsi da'ketubat benin dichrin, ma'i tazu zehu da'anasuha. And the Baraita is teaching, just like a woman who sells her ketubah to a third party, right, let's say she wants some money now, she wants to buy something for herself, and so she has a right, generally, to sell the future value of her ketubah. And if she does so, that does not mean that she sells the future right of her sons to inherit, right? Why? Because we say she needs money now. She's under duress and she needs money. So yes, she will sell her collection of money, but she doesn't intend to completely sell all rights, future rights, for her children to inherit. So that's what we say in general, and this would apply here also. A woman may sell her ketubah to her own husband, yeah, but even if she does, she does not intend to sell off the future rights of her sons. Why? Because this is she needs money now. She has to pay for something here. She has to pay for the husband's injury. So if there is added money beyond the 100 or 200, so yes, she will sell the right to collect that to her husband in order to pay for the injury that she gave him. Yes, that's true. But she doesn't mean that she's giving up also the right for her sons to inherit. That's what the Baraita meant when it said that we do not force her to sell off the entire amount of a ketubah, meaning the base amount of the ketubah, and she also does not get reduced the amount of the ketubah. That clause was referring to the benin dichrin. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen ve'amen.